about this.
These two
people.
I am geeking out.
To the Geeks Unleashed podcast.
Mark.
Jasmine.
What a nerd.
Nerd alert.
Unleashed.
Television.
What are you talking about?
Anything can be a podcast.
Video game.
Geek.
What is a geek?
Oh, hi, Mark.
The whole point is, of course, the plot is.
You guys have great conversation.
I am geeking out.
Unleashed.
Movies. People love movies.
All right, you guys, podcast time.
You're listening to the Geeks Unleashed podcast. Part of the BCP Bad Batch. We take our passions and our fandoms and we turn them into conversations with you.
Hello, welcome to Geeks Unleashed. It's episode 158. I'm Mark.
I'm Jasmine.
Each week on the Geeks Unleashed podcast, we catch up on our pop culture lives as well as bring you a review of something adapted from the comic book or gaming world.
Yes, and if you're watching on YouTube, thank you so much. We appreciate that. We would also love it if you would like this video and subscribe to our channel. And if you're listening on your favorite podcast platform, we appreciate that as well. We would also very much love it if you would leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or Spotify.
Also, please feel free to donate to our Ko-Fi, which I can then use to buy medicine as I feel terribly ill with the man flu and may not have long left.
That is, yes, please. We need to get Mark well.
Oh, dear. Right. Jumping straight into this week's Geek of the Week. Would you like to go first?
No, you go first.
Okay, sure. So a couple of days ago, I watched the latest team up of Godzilla and King Kong. I don't know why it's called Godzilla X Kong, but there we go. I don't really want to say too much about it because I'm sure we're going to do an episode on it at some point. But I loved it. It was amazing. It was a real, what I felt was a kind of an Avengers style movie. It's very much removed from where it started, which was slow, drama, paced, intellectual, and then 20 minutes of fighting at the end.
Yeah, this nobody goes to monster movies for an intellectual movie.
Well, I think we enjoyed all of those films, but now we're getting into just have a fight.
Yes. Right?
And have various fights.
Exactly. Like the whole reason you go see Pacific Rim. Like, I want to see kaiju destroying cities. I don't want to see all of the other stuff.
And Kong is in it throughout the film, really. Godzilla, not as much in it as King Kong, but he's, I would say, the focal point of the movie.
Yeah.
In some way, probably the primary character, which is weird. So,
yeah, he's the protagonist. It's his movie and everybody else is just secondary.
Yeah, it definitely feels like that. And it is probably, I mean, look, it's a monster movie, but it's getting in the realms of silliness now. But, he gets a robotic metal glove as well, which is just...
Yeah, awesome. I saw that in the trailer. I was wondering how that turned out on screen.
I mean, they did that to help him because he comes across someone that actually hurts him before they have to go back for the final battle. So out of nowhere, these guys go, these humans are like, oh, yeah, we built this thing, which, we saved or whatever. And this might help Kong. It was one of those typical, there'd been no build up to this previously where.
Of course. Let's make the jet invisible.
Yeah, one of those moments. So I didn't really worry about it too much because they had showed sort of a secret base, I don't know, 20 minutes earlier. So I guess there was, an element of build up. But
a lot of times you leave all of your suspension of belief outside of the theater anyway before you go in to see a movie like this.
Yeah. No Billy Bobby Brown on this one. She seemed to duck out, but there was a lot of handovers from the previous movie that came across. So I don't think there's anyone that's done more than two movies from memory. So but yeah, anyway, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good movie, and it's the kind of film, honestly, see it on the big screen. I know you're saying you might not get time, but big screen is definitely the way you should watch a movie like this.
Yeah. Well, if I just sit really close to my TV, I think I'll get the same effect.
Just go to the cinema. I'll get a midnight showing or something. Like, go, honestly.
I have a 60-inch TV though. If I sit close enough, I think I could like take up my whole field of vision, like going to the movie theater.
I love it. I probably would go and see it again. I thought it was really good.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But I have an unlimited pass. I don't think I'd necessarily pay again, but I might go.
Yeah. The pass thing. I need to work on getting that. I need to get that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, well, it's like $18 a movie.
Yeah, with the pass thing, it works out at just over the price of one cinema. Like, I think the cinema now is like, was it 12, 13 quid for an adult or something? And my pass is 16 quid a month. Mm-hmm. So I've already been. Well, actually, the month's only just started. I've been once this month. But I've got another trip booked tomorrow for the cinema, so.
Fancy, fancy.
I'm seeing an older film tomorrow. It's only about 2 years. Anime film, Suzume.
I don't know.
I'll send you after the show. But anyway, what was your Geek of the Week?
So my Geek of the Week is Crunchyroll just announced the premiere dates of My Hero Academia season 7. It's coming out in July. And so I was like, okay, if it's coming out in July, I got plenty of time. So I have started a My Hero Academia rewatch. I think this will be my third time rewatching the series. But mainly because so much time goes between seasons. I just don't remember what happened. So, I'm just starting over. And it's just kind of something I throw on in the background while I'm walking on my treadmill. So.
I've never watched it. I don't really know anything about it. I saw a tiny trailer for it the other day, but that's about it.
It's so fun. I actually went, the second movie that they had, you know how they have those movie theaters that have the seats that move and then they spray stuff. So I went and saw the My Hero Academia movie in one of those theaters. And that was a really cool, that was a perfect movie to have that experience at a movie theater. But because it was an anime and it was short, it was just the right amount of time. I feel like if you went to watch a movie that was 2 hours long, it might've made me nauseous. Just being in motion the whole time would have been a bit too much.
I've never done one of those. I'd like to though.
Yeah, it was definitely worth it for a shorter action movie. It's definitely worth it. I would not do that for Oppenheimer. I think that would just be, or Lord of the Rings. I would not do that for Lord of the Rings.
Probably wouldn't suit Oppenheimer.
Or any Zack Snyder film. If you went and saw the Justice League, 4.5 hours.
Or any of the Avatar films.
No.
Extended editions.
No, absolutely not. No.
If they ever put Rebel Moon at the cinema. Well, actually, I think they did do a limited release. But anyway, yeah, one of those.
Yeah. I just think that would be too much. Too much. It just starts to get to you after a while. Because it's not just a subtle motion. The seats move enough that you're just if you're not holding on to the armrest, you're oh shit.
What do you do with your popcorn or your drink so you can't?
No, I didn't have any food. I was I've never done this before. Let me not have any food. So I didn't have anything. I can't imagine trying to eat or drink pop. I imagine people spill stuff on themselves all the time.
I don't know where those are in the UK, if they have them at all. I'll have to look into that.
Usually they have them at the big chains. Each of the big chains has one screen that has that set up. So you should just, but it's also double the price of a regular ticket. I think I paid $25 to see that movie in that particular theater.
Oh, my local one doesn't have that at all.
No, that's a bummer. So that's all I got for my Geek of the Week, but I am excited. I really, really love My Hero Academia. And so I'm excited to see what we get with season 7, especially, me, I'm a fan of the villains. So the villains just get better and better with that series. So I'm excited to see where we're going.
Okay, so jumping straight into this week's movie review, X-Men The Last Stand from 2006 brings our X-Men trilogy to a close, although not our X-Men content. So... change of director for this movie, directed by Brett Ratner. Screenplay is by Simon Kinberg and Zach Penn. It's based off of Marvel Comics. The movie specifically is based off of two different storylines, which is Astonishing X-Men Volume 3, the first six issues by Joss Whedon, Gifted, which there was a mutant cure, and the Dark Phoenix Saga, Uncanny X-Men 129 to 138 by Claremont and Brian.
Yep, and this film stars Patrick Stewart as Xavier, Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, Ian McKellen as Magneto, Famke Janssen as Jean Grey, James Marsden as Cyclops, barely, Halle Berry as Storm, Anna Paquin as Rogue, Rebecca Romijn as Mystique, barely, Kelsey Grammer as Hank McCoy, Aaron Stanford as Pyro, Sean Ashmore as Bobby Drake, Elliot Page as Kitty Pryde, and Vinnie Jones as the Juggernaut, bitch.
There's also a huge amount of other mutants in this, so you can IMDb them all you like. So,
gigantic.
We finally had all five original mutants, X-Men mutants, sorry, the X-Men, I mean, in this movie. Mm-hmm. So first appearances in the actual comics, Angel, aka Warren Worthington, Beast, Magneto, Cyclops, Jean Grey, and Xavier all made their first appearance in X-Men, all issue one all the way back in September 1963. By Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. So that is great that all five made their first, finally made their movie appearances together. However, not a single time were all five on screen at the same time.
We couldn't get Angel in there with Professor X.
No, or Cyclops really with anybody. Wolverine, his first appearance was Incredible Hulk, issue 180 in November 1974. By the way, I'm just going to do this a bit quicker because you can go back and listen to the last two episodes for more. Colossus, he had a smaller role in the last film, but anyway, Colossus and Storm made their first appearance in Giant Size X-Men issue 1, which came out in 1975. The Juggernaut, however, he made his first appearance in X-Men 12 from July 1965 by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby again. So not long after the first issue. Kitty Pryde made her first appearance in Uncanny X-Men 129 from January 1980 by Claremont and Brian as well. So,
you know, Kitty Pryde is actually a real person's name. She's a woman that lives in Canada. She's some kind of professor. She got so much press when this film came out that she legally changed her name to K.D. Pryde because she did not want to be known or associated with a comic book character, but she, the writer based Kitty Pryde's name on that lady.
Oh, really?
Can you imagine, like, some comic book writer is like, yeah, Mark Brasington, that's a great name. Let me just name some villain in my comic book that, and then people start calling you up.
And then, well, then I get annoyed and change my name. and then you've got like famous actors like, I can't remember, Nicolas Cage or someone. I'm sure Nicolas Cage has called his daughter a comic book character or something.
Well, and, Nick Cage is his stage name. Nick Cage isn't his real name.
No, I'm sure there's. Oh, and also Kevin Smith. Didn't Kevin Smith name one of his kids after a comic book character as well? Oh. I'm sure that's the case. Right, anyway. So this movie was released on 24th of May 2006, had a running time of 104 minutes. Had a budget of $210 million and made almost double back at $460 million.
Yeah, it did really well. It was the highest grossing X-Men film until Days of Future Past. So, fun facts. Oh boy, all kinds of drama came out with this film. So, originally, there was a different storyline when Bryan Singer was still set to direct this film. And that storyline was going to have a three-way pull for Jean Grey's attention. So Singer had originally had this concept of like Emma Frost and the Hellfire Club was also going to be trying to get Jean Grey to come to their side. And he had said he really wanted Sigourney Weaver to play Emma Frost. So you would have had Emma Frost and then Magneto and the X-Men all trying to get Jean to come back to one of those sides. But of course Singer left and he went on to do Superman Returns instead, which at the time pissed off the producer, the head of, what was it, 20th Century Fox, pissed the head of 20th Century Fox off so badly that they rushed production of this film so that they could release it before Superman Returns. Like, He was that petty. And he went and got Brett Ratner, who was originally slated to be the director for Superman Returns. So he went into their director and then got his movie out faster. But like, there was so much drama on set because of it. So like, they went through, I'll skip straight to the casting. They went through so many different directors. So when Singer left, they brought in Matthew Vaughn. You may recognize that name from Kick-Ass or even The Kingsman, or he did Days of Future Past, I believe. So he eventually came back and did an X-Men movie. But Matthew Vaughn came in. He was the one who actually cast Vinnie Jones and Kelsey Grammer. But then when he found out, like, they brought him on in 2005. And when he found out that the release date was May of 2006, he was like, this is not enough time for me to make the kind of movie that I want to make. Also, he was very unhappy with the way that they baited Halle Berry to come back, because Halle Berry had a falling out. Her and Bryan Singer did not get along in the first two films. There are rumors that he was on prescription painkillers and was sometimes really high on set, and that really pissed Halle Berry off. So she didn't want to come back. Also, she said there wasn't enough character development. So they wrote a fake script, gave Halle Berry the fake script, and they were like, hey, look at all of the lines that you're going to have in this movie. This is why you should come back. And when
I remember hearing about this.
Yeah, and when Matthew Vaughn found out that that's what they were doing, he was like, nah, I'm out. Like, this is shitty. So he left. And then they went through a slew of other people. They reached out to Darren Aronofsky, who had just done The Fountain with Hugh Jackman. They reached out to Joss Whedon. At the time, he said he was working on a Wonder Woman film that did not quite materialize for him. They reached out to Rob Bowman, who had just directed Elektra. They reached out to Alex Proyas, who did iRobot. But he had such a bad experience working with Fox on iRobot that as soon as they contacted him, he told them no without even hearing their offer. They reached out to Zack Snyder, but Zack Snyder was already working on 300. They reached out to Peter Berg. He flat out declined. I mean, it was just like they were going through directors. Finally, they landed on Brett Ratner because he was in talks to direct Superman Returns. So they were being petty. So that's one. But also they reached out to Brett Ratner because he had just rushed a film through production. And the last film that he had rushed through production was Rush Hour. And so they were like, okay, if he could speed that film through, then he can speed our film through. So that's how we got Brett Ratner. But of course, Brett Ratner caused all kinds of problems on his own, which Elliot Page and Anna Paquin complained about later, about him and how he would be very homophobic on set, which was not a welcoming environment for a great many people. So there's still all kinds of drama going on behind the scenes. Rebecca Romijn and James Marsden were already signed on to other projects, and that is one of the reasons that their roles are so reduced in this movie, because they just did not have the time to film for this film. So that's why they're not in it. Kelsey Grammer was actually so excited at the idea of being a part of the X-Men universe that he auditioned for this role, and it was the first time that Kelsey Grammer had to audition for anything in like 20 years. And then what else we got? Oh, and Sam Neill was originally up for the role of Beast, but he ended up having to pull out because of scheduling conflicts. I think he could have been a good Beast. I love Sam Neill. And also, this was the first film to use what they call the Lola de-aging technology. Although I thought that their de-aging at the very beginning of this film was a travesty. Going back and looking at it now, like back in 2006, I'm sure I thought it was cool, but now it's like, ooh, that's technology has come further now.
And well, they should have de-aged them to look like Fassbender and
I know James McAvoy. That was great. Go back in and just put them in the movie.
But you know, if they ever did like a remix of it or whatever, they should have put those two in the beginning of the
film. Oh my god, that would be so funny. I would love that.
No one was ever probably clever enough to think, oh, this film isn't gonna do that well.
Yeah.
I mean, financially it did all right. I mean, it's weird that they didn't decide to continue it. So
Well,
probably because of the reviews.
Like, doing the plan, he only wanted two movies. So he thought when he finished X2, that was it. Like, he didn't know that there was a third movie planned. And it was the studio that kept pushing for a third movie. So, and it's probably why we got all of the drama and the lackluster, I guess, fan support, even though it made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. So, the IMDb summary of this movie is: the human government develops a cure for mutations, and Jean Grey becomes a darker, uncontrollable persona called the Phoenix, who allies with Magneto, causing escalation into an all-out battle for the X-Men. I know that's actually this film. A lot of these summaries could be any film. So,
good job, IMDb.
Yeah.
We give you an A for effort on that one.
But on the previous episodes, we've talked about what our knowledge of X-Men and some of that was. I'll be honest here, I've never read the Dark Phoenix saga, so I don't have knowledge of that. Things will change in regards to that. However, I have read The Cure by Joss Whedon. No, it wasn't called The Cure, sorry. The Gift, Gifted by Joss Whedon, which is The Cure. I remember being quite excited about Joss Whedon's run. I've read all of Grant Morrison's run for his new X-Men, and it was really quite a big thing. It was the first time I'd ever read X-Men continuously. And then when Grant Morrison stepped off, I think they handed that book over to Chuck Austin or something, and it went downhill. But they gave Joss Whedon his own book, Astonishing X-Men, and they pivoted that team out of New X-Men across to Astonishing X-Men and kept the tone fairly similar, really. And however, they brought back spandex, because I remember Grant Morrison had taken that away, and sort of more serious costumes. But it was quite a cool thing where I remember the opening scene of the first issue, one of the last panels, just see all six of them stepping in. And I remember that at the end, towards Grant Morrison's run, Jean Grey was killed off. I think she's back now, but I think she'd been killed off for over 10 years or something after Grant Morrison killed her off. Anyway, I read the first, I want to say, 12 to 18 issues of Grant Morrison's run. Joss Whedon's run. But yeah, no, I remember reading all about The Cure and stuff. And then I think it came out around 2004 or 5 or something. So I could see that whole Rush thing. They probably just grabbed that storyline that was on comic book shelves about a year previously to the movie coming out. So, although it's previous, it would only be on shelves about a year, but Marvel Comics obviously plan all their titles 2 or 3 years ahead. So internally, that would have been known about. And you can imagine Brett Ratner was like, yeah, I'll have that. So I'll have that, and I'll mix it in with my other stuff. And, he probably just said, what's going on at the moment in the comic book world? I'll have some of that. So, but yeah, that's quite, I think that knowledge, was kind of weird, I guess, going into this movie. Now, the Dark Phoenix saga, I did watch it on the animated series when it came out in the 90s. So did you watch it on the animated series?
I don't remember it from the series, but I know that's where it first popped up, at least in this version of this form of media.
Yeah. Oh, you mean on like actual television? Yeah. So, no, I remember that. So my experience of the Dark Phoenix saga was the animated series. So, but obviously we plan to read it. But to be honest, before we talk about, what's our overall thoughts? I just thought, what were your thoughts when you watched it originally?
Oh my God, I was so disappointed.
Yeah,
I think it's because there's something so, I don't know, I don't want to say unique, that's not the word, but like there's something just so different about the weight and the anticipation that you have to see something that's a continuation. Like, even to this day, like whenever we get new Marvel films, like it's always this anticipation because you have seen the previous 836 films that came out before that. So it's like X2 was so good. And coming off of X2, we were all so excited about like the next version. The trailers made us nervous, but I remember going into this movie, like, being really pumped about it and then leaving just flabbergasted, like, flabbergasted the first time I saw this movie. And that was the only time I watched it. Like, I walked out of the theater and I never, ever touched this movie again after that until yesterday. So, like, yeah, the first time around, obviously, I didn't like that they took the professor out. I didn't like that they had reduced Jean Grey to, like, this silent, I don't know, untouchable character. There was so much about it that I didn't enjoy. And it was just like, I don't know. I think my expectations were too high.
I think I said last week, I was hoping that it was going to lead into an actual true Phoenix Saga movie with the Shi'ar and the aliens that they have in the X-Men universe, and none of that happened. So I was hoping for a true Phoenix. And so what I do remember about the Phoenix was being underwater. I think they eventually is cocooned out, and and the Phoenix itself is an alien entity that sort of takes possession of powerful mutants or powerful people, and that's not what happened in this movie at all. So, but yeah, like you, I walked in there really high expectations. X-Men 1 was really good, X2 was phenomenal, and then I walk into this and I was like, what on earth is going on? And I just remember thinking, what is going on with comics? Blade 3 was terrible. You know, this is terrible. I can't remember now what other trilogies were up where they just died a death. Oh, Spider-Man 3. Just, you know, they just don't seem to be able to make a good third one to finish it off. They do really well with 1 and 2. And then they just don't seem to know what they're doing with the third one. It's crazy to me what you said, though, that they thought about getting the director who did Elektra. What were they thinking?
We're desperate.
Yeah, we're that desperate, we're going to get you guys in.
Yeah, they were very desperate.
Yeah.
And now that I know that, like, I can see where they messed up. Like, they messed up rushing. That's what, if this had come out in 2007 instead of 2006, I'm sure it would have been a better film.
Maybe. and now, having rewatched it, have your thoughts changed, Jasmine?
Yes. So honestly, I thought this time around, like, it wasn't as bad as I remembered, but, like, I was not going into it this time. Like, I didn't have the same emotional attachment. So, like, going in to do the rewatch, I was very much expecting an overall, like, shitty experience. And I didn't feel that way this time. This time it was just kind of like, yeah, it wasn't great, but, like, I was not as emotional about it being bad. So did I enjoy it? Not really, but, like, I didn't hate it like I did the first time I watched it. So it felt different this time. And I think also it feels different because we're doing this theme run. So we're watching all of the movies very close together. And I think being able to have that content so close to each other, like, there's just a lot more connectivity. Well, it feels like there's a lot more connectivity because we're watching them so close together now. There are a lot of things that I do like. I like the updates to some of the costumes. I like that we have, like, a ton of characters. Like, normally that gets in the way, but, like, I kind of like it. And especially with mutants, because it's always fun to see, like, what weird kind of mutant ability they're going to have. So it's fun.
Oh, like the big guy. The big guy who just shrinks.
I know.
So to fit in the tiny space on the seat. I was like,
how convenient would that be? That would be a good one to have. Yeah. I enjoyed it. But now that I'm older, like, I really did not enjoy the way that the women were treated in this one. Like, I didn't like that Jean had essentially no autonomy. The way that Magneto just, like, threw Mystique in the trash, like, that was real messed up. Just lots of, like, nitpicky things now, but overall, I think it wasn't as bad as I remember it, but also it did not get any better.
It's really weird. So I didn't enjoy when I first watched it. I think I did watch it once more, and then it's not a film I go back and rewatch. However, over the last 7 days, I've rewatched it twice, and that was mainly to do with just not feeling well, to be honest. I rewatched it a week ago and then became really, really ill and pretty much like had man through brain. So I was like, oh, I need to rewatch it.
Yeah.
So I rewatched it, and it was the same thoughts I had when I rewatched it earlier today as a week ago. I thought, I don't hate this film as much as I used to. I used to really hate this film. And
I
think there is that whole emotional attachment. I'm going into it now knowing it's not going to be what I thought it was.
Yes.
And I'm not as heavily disappointed as I used to be, because actually I know I'm not getting the actual true Phoenix saga. I'm not getting a giant Phoenix alien bird. I'm not getting, you know, aliens and Shi'ar and the Shi'ar Empress and all the rest of it. I can't remember all of the details now. But, you know, I'm not getting all of that stuff that I thought comes with a true Phoenix saga. So I'm going in with this, you know, second director who, well, actually it sounds like he was director number 18 from your list. but I'm not going in with the guy who set up the plan, who left it on the cliffhanger showing us the Phoenix underwater,
right?
And so it must have been an element of a story even in the second one when it ended. And then he just saw Superman and thought, yep, I'm going to go do that instead. So, which didn't pay too well for him, because I don't think anyone particularly likes Superman Returns. So.
No, he definitely came back and said that he regretted it. He regretted not doing X3.
Yeah, should have done it.
So. Yeah, he said, I regretted it. While I was watching the movie, I regretted not directing it.
I think we all regretted it too. So.
Yeah.
On this rewatch, I hated it a lot less. I don't even think I hated it this time
around. Yeah, I didn't hate it this time.
I wouldn't say I like love it or anything, but I thought it was so much better than it was previously. And there was a lot I have to say, there's a lot I liked about it. I liked seeing the team dynamics. I liked seeing the danger room. I liked seeing Wolverine getting thrown by Colossus. And shearing a sentinel's head off.
Yeah.
I loved seeing a lot more of Kitty Pryde running through halls and being brave and giving some character development. Not massive, but giving some character development. I liked seeing little mutants like Leech, who was actually a Generation X. Well, I know that he used to be in Generation X in the comics. I'll be honest, can't confess to being a massive knowledgeable on Leech. But I know that he used to show up here and there on the odd pages when I used to read Generation X. Him and his friend Artie, and Artie showed up in X-Men 2. So they used to play together occasionally in Generation X. So that was cool. So I liked those little bits there. There was definitely moments for this. I thought, actually, I'm enjoying seeing these mutants. I'm enjoying seeing the school. Don't get me wrong, there's still probably like 80-something points in this movie that are awful. Mm-hmm. And if we were to really go line by line and really criticise it, yes, I agree. Halle Berry's Storm has not given any more screen time or character development than she was last time.
Nice.
However, it is nice that Professor Xavier did say, right, well, Scott's gone now, so really I'm looking to you. Yeah, you're in charge. That was good. And in all honesty, she probably should have been put in charge anyway, because the little minimal time we got with Scott Summers, he was kind of a whiny, sort of controlling boyfriend. So they didn't really do him too well. Do you know what? It's really weird, because I've been rewatching the animated series from the 90s, and that Cyclops is a little bit stronger than this version of Cyclops. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I enjoyed it a lot more. It's weird. When I was watching it, I was thinking, it's weird I'm enjoying this. I can't reconcile.
But it's more expectations. Like, I really think it's expectations, because you went into it expecting it to be as awful as it was back in 2006, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree, yeah. So, of the vast selection of characters, and it is vast, we've got, you know, Callisto and, you know, all of those sort of the underground mutants, and we've obviously got our minimal mutants like Cyclops, and it's a big cast out there. Is there anyone that stands out as your favorite?
Yes, two. So okay. Hank McCoy and Magneto were my favorites in this one. Magneto, just because I love his dedication to the cause. Like, he has not wavered from the very first time he came on screen in the first film. Like, he has never, ever wavered from his beliefs. But at the same time, he never, ever wanted awful things to happen to Charles. Like, he just wanted Charles to get out of his way. He never actually wanted Charles dead. And so to watch him watch Xavier die, that whole sequence was just so great. And then when Pyro was mouthing off about Xavier and Magneto was like, yo, man, look, watch your mouth. He's still my friend, even though he's dead. Watch your mouth. Like, he was just like, my greatest regret is that Charles didn't get to live to see, or Charles had to die for this cause to move forward. That's my greatest regret. So I just loved Magneto in here. And then Hank, I really liked Hank McCoy, and especially like Hank in as Beast the whole time. Just like Beast in a freaking three-piece suit talking to the President of the United States. Like, I thought that was like so cool that he's like the Secretary of the Mutant. Affairs. So I love kind of like the old guys, I would say. I like the older mutants in this one a lot more. I found the kids very annoying. I found that the kids were like childish, which makes sense. They're kids. I get that. So I just didn't enjoy them this time around. But yeah, so definitely Magneto and Hank were my two favorites.
You know, I would say I really favorited, if that's the correct expression, Kitty Pryde. I thought it was amazing seeing her. I know her character development was tiny, but I don't get me wrong, the love interest thing that they decided to do with Bobby was a bit cheap. However, I did love seeing that she was background in number one, you know, from just grabbing her bag or something to actually being fully on the team. And I love that when we got the final team together on the essentially the last stand, that Shadowcat is one of the X-Men from having those tiny appearances in one and two and then being fully there. I thought that was great. And just seeing her actually get some time on her own, which we'll play later on when we go back to Days of Future Past. I thought she was really good. I thought she handled the jump from being a little student to, you know, a cameo sort of minor student in the background of the school to suddenly becoming a fully fledged X-Men. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I thought that was really cool. I don't know. I enjoyed seeing it, and I've always been a big Shadowcat fan. So it was just.
I just wonder though, like, how does she come up through the floor? Like, I can understand the concept of releasing the molecules and you fall, but like, how does she always come back up through the floor?
I think it's just to do with the scripts. They just write there and it happens.
That was one of my beefs. I was like, but how does she come back up through the floor?
Thing with the Juggernaut, because earlier in the episode they said, you know, you can't let him get any momentum. And then when Shadowcat drags him halfway through the floor, he wasn't able to build up any momentum, and suddenly he smashes the whole thing and then he jumps up too. Mm-hmm. So, but that wasn't possible. They said you can't allow him to build up momentum. And he was trapped by Shadowcat, so therefore he should have been stuck. Yeah. By all rights, I can understand maybe if he tried to headbang his way out, I could have got around to that.
Yeah.
But they said don't let him build up any momentum. She stops him.
But apparently, he's just like super strength, like Hulk.
I mean, look, if we're gonna actually real nitpick about the Juggernaut, he's not even a mutant in the comics. He's not a mutant.
Oh yeah, isn't it something about some crystal or something?
Yeah, the gem of Krytoriak or whatever it's called. And also, he's Charles Xavier's half-brother. At no point, in the comics, he's always step-brother or something like that. I'll be honest, I can't remember, but step-brother or half-brother. So when they got introduced him in the movie, and they're in the same location at Jean Grey's house. It's not like, hi, bro. Oh, hi, bro. You're all right. There's none of that. They didn't know each other. It was ridiculous. And they made him a mutant, and they also removed the fact that they're brothers.
It didn't fit the script, Mark.
It clearly didn't, no. Do you know, I in the 90s, Marvel Comics bought another comic book company called Malibu Comics, had very similar style of mutants, something called Ultras. And they bought it, I think. So they obtained the Men in Black rights. Also, they bought it as well because they got to take out the competition. And they run Malibu Comics for a couple of years and they just shut it down. And then Marvel owned the rights and don't do anything with them. I think they also bought them because they wanted their inking department or something like that. Yeah. So, or colouring or something. I think it was to do with colours. I think they wanted something to do with their colouring technology, if I remember rightly, as well. However, what they did was they sent a couple of Marvel characters across, and the Juggernaut was one of them. And he led a book for only 6 or 7 issues called The Exiles. It was the Malibu Comics version of an X-Men title. And he also had two real minor mutants. I think one called Reaper and another one, I can't remember. But I really loved that book. I remember like picking it up and I thought this is brilliant. And reading Juggernaut as a good guy leading a team was quite surreal. That was actually one of my kind of fond memories of Juggernaut. And then pretty much he's always been a villain since. I think he has the odd moment where he softens. But yeah, so to see him as a bad guy in this book with mutant powers, sorry, in this film with mutant powers and not even recognizing his own brother is just ridiculous. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe that would have come out if there'd been another sequel. Maybe the truth would have ruined its way out. So.
Yeah.
At least Charles Xavier and Vinny, you know, aka, Patrick Stewart and Vinny Jones are both English, so at least they've got that in common. I think they've come from different backgrounds.
That's your consolation. Like, oh, they're both British. It's totally fine. Yay.
Well, I just think maybe that's the lineage is there somewhere else. So
okay, all right. Like, there's a family tree somewhere.
Yeah, maybe that's what I mean. Like, he's from the football London or something.
Maybe they're from like neighboring villages.
Yeah, they're neighboring villages.
Yeah. He's the son of the milkman. That's why they're half brothers.
Yeah, maybe something like that. I don't know, but. Yeah, it just annoyed me at the time when the film came out. I was just like, supposed to be brothers. And also, Juggernaut's not a mutant. It's lazy. It was lazy writing.
So, it happens. They were rushed, remember?
There was a lot. There was a lot of lazy writing going on. So, right, anyway, my overall favourite is Shadowcat. I thought she was great. My one disappointing thing was that Rogue went and took the cure, although I get it. But I do think it was for a boy. So.
Yeah, I did not enjoy that. I didn't like it back then, and I still don't like it.
Yeah, but I mean, look, the only thing I can get around is, you know, like Wolverine said, he's not her dad, and he let her go and make her own decision. And if she was real, she made her own decision. So you just have to stand by the fact that she wanted to make her own decision. Yeah. If it was a real person and a real person said, this is what I want to do, you just have to support that decision. And look, I get it. I suppose if I couldn't touch people, I probably would want to take it too. I don't think I would want to live with the ability to never touch a single human and ever again without the risk of killing them. So,
I mean, I think.
However, I think her motivations were seeing Kitty and Bobby on the ice rink were.
Yeah. Well, originally they kissed, and Brett Ratner took that scene out because he said at the time Elliot Page looked really young, even though Kitty Pryde was supposed to be 18. And he was like, it just looks like jailbait. And so they took the kiss out.
Yeah. Yeah. Although the kiss is probably unnecessary.
Yeah. You get the gist.
Also, it makes Bobby look terrible.
Well, of course.
I mean, he was skating between fairly terrible anyway, with the whole holding both their hands at the funeral and then popping in her bedroom to see if she's all right. So Bobby, I think we know where you were going. He wasn't trying to be her friend, so I think Rogue called him out on it.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm not pressuring you. Blah 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 blah.
Well, yeah, no, when she said, when you think guys only think about one thing, I was just like, yeah, okay. but I can understand her frustration though. Like, she can't touch anyone, and it was a battle she couldn't win. So, anyway, that cure isn't gonna stay in place, I would imagine, when other films come along. So,
well,
right, what's your thoughts overall on the just the structure of the movie? There's a lot going on. It's kind of two plot lines. We've got the Phoenix saga,
yeah,
and we also got the cure, and yeah, and obviously different mutants have got different character developments going on as well.
I mean, I think it's hard to say, because like, I didn't mind the concurrent storylines. I liked the storyline with the White House. I liked the storyline with Magneto building an army. But like, I don't know, the way they executed it and the writing was not there. Like, I feel like the structure was there, but like, all of the parts in between were not there. Like,
I think I agree with you. The structure is there.
Yeah.
He put a story together that was intertwined with different camps. You know, like you just said, the White House, the underground mutants that Magneto is leading, the cure with Warren Worthington's father, which his motivation was, he clearly was prejudiced against his son.
Yes.
All of those things were there, but it just felt to me like sloppy and lazy writing, and
yeah,
and a real lack of, maybe a lack of research, but also if it didn't fit. Now, in his defense, he was rushed. However, maybe this is why other people pulled away, because they didn't want to be rushed. Mm-hmm. So, you know, ultimately, somebody was going to take this job. So, you know, there's, even if it hadn't have been who we had, it would have been another guy and another guy and another. They would have carried on going, and they would have just got an indie director in the end, who would have, of course, said yes.
Yes.
Because it's like, well, I directed that 30 grand movie last week, and you want to give me a, how much budget?
110 million? I'll do it. Hell yeah. I'll do it.
100%. And can I have a percentage of the takings? So,
yeah.
Probably not that one.
I don't know. I like, yes, the framework I can get behind, but it's the in-betweens that just ruin it. Like, they ruin it.
Yeah. So, of all of the mess, is anything that stands out as a favorite?
Favorite moment. So, my favorite sequence is this one behind me with Magneto moving the Golden Gate Bridge, which turns out, that sequence, it cost them $35 million to edit that sequence, which was 1/6 of the entire film's budget on this sequence.
Wow.
But this was my favorite, just because, like, I don't know. I always love it when the fantasy films, quote unquote, like, incorporate real places. So the fact that this bridge is so iconic, and like, Magneto is just like, yoink, I'll move you over here and put you back someplace else. Like he just couldn't care less about anything that humanity has going on. Like, he couldn't care less. And right. I thought that him destroying
Homo sapiens.
Yeah. Like, him destroying this big iconic figure, I thought it was very par for the course for him. So yeah, the Golden Gate Bridge sequence was probably one of my favorites.
Yeah, that was cool. I remember reading a comment online about why couldn't you have just nicked a plane?
A boat. Like, you control metal. You could have literally picked a whole bunch of boats like in the harbor and gone over there to Alcatraz. Like, you did not have to pick up a whole flipping bridge.
Also, the other thing is, if he could have picked up a whole bridge, why didn't he just land the bridge on the building and kill Leech?
Because then you don't get the fight sequence, Mark.
No, I know. But if you've gone to all the hassle, why would you stop the bridge? you know, 10 meters before the front door. Why not just go that additional 10 meters and just kill everyone?
But also Alcatraz is a former prison, which means 75% of the building and the insides of the building are metal. You could have literally just like hovered over the building and like crushed it without ever going inside the building at all.
And also your powers only stop when you're like a couple of inches away from Leech. So like you say, he could have just, he could have flown over there on his own, probably. I don't know about all those bullets and stuff. Maybe that could have been
a problem. He could have asked Phoenix to like put him in a bubble or something and hover him over there.
Honestly, they should really, in honesty, they should all be dead. So the Leech should have been killed off. The X-Men should have just arrived after it all been done, and Magneto flies off and Leech is dead, and
Mark's like, kill them all.
Only because it just didn't make sense. It's just, you've gone to all the hassle of nicking a bridge and then you stop it just before the prison. I get what you're saying. Obviously, villains are not overly clear on their longer term vision. So. And also, we would have had all those cool fight scenes. Look, I'll be honest, one of my favorite scenes was at the beginning when we had in the danger room. And the team up and Colossus throwing Wolverine. I know I said that earlier, but I was just like, I wanted to see more of that stuff. I honestly, if this had been a film where the X-Men were maybe getting hunted, and what would have been cool is if two had ended slightly differently, where maybe even putting a cliffhanger ending where they didn't actually get to the president in time before he gave his speech. And this opens up with Sentinels hunting mutants throughout America. That would have been brilliant. If we could have maybe actually shelved the Dark Phoenix saga for this movie, and if Cyclops didn't have time to be in the film, so James Marsden or whatever his name is. No, it could, like, again, this, if I
but
was
didn't
to
they
say,
do that in Apocalypse?
What's that?
Aren't there Sentinels in Apocalypse?
Oh, I can't remember. I've seen that film one time. When we rewatch it, I thought that movie was awful. But no, it would have been cool to have had that storyline before we then come back to the Phoenix. You could have had Phoenix and Scott Summers not really in this movie, and had the rest of the team dealing with the fallout of what happened from the back of the second film. They kind of wrapped up the second film quite nicely, but that would have been really cool to have actually missed the president's speech. And then this film opens up with Sentinels hunting down mutants. And then we've seen this in the comics loads of times where they've been on the run, and that would have been a phenomenal storyline. And then with number four, after Superman Returns had failed, we could have had Bryan Singer back and he could have done his Phoenix Saga film.
No dice for you, Mark. Didn't work out.
That's what that should have happened.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So that's what you would have cut or changed?
Yeah, I guess I would have probably, rather than having these two different things going on, and I think having a badass mutants getting hunted film, I guess that's a slight continuation of the second film. But I think it would have been cool if you'd have done it on a darker level, more comic book based, a much more team approach. I don't know. I love that opening sequence. It was cool. I would have liked to have seen more of that. And then if they could have ended with the film where they get to the Sentinel, the base where, what's it called, Master Mold, or whatever his name is building all of the Sentinels, and they have to destroy the Sentinel base or whatever, and maybe some sort of truce is reached with, maybe that's when they then can present the president with all the files of what happened from the second film, and there's a few politicians trying to stop the X-Men from actually getting the truth out still. Maybe some hangers over who are already embracing the Sentinel project. They're making some money out of it.
Yeah, of course.
So I think that would have been a cool storyline. And then maybe like the titles go up, mid-title sequence, we then tease the Phoenix saga. I think people would have been pumped.
Okay.
Do you know that sounds better?
I don't know. I was disappointed that there weren't more Sentinels, because I loved to hate the Sentinels in the cartoon. So I thought it would have been cool to have him here. Yes. And I thought it would have, they would have fit in here. Like, because then Magneto's Brotherhood would have had something else to fight against, you know?
Yes.
I think what I would have cut, I would not have let Wolverine kill Phoenix. I would have made it somehow, some way that she kills herself. Like the Jean that we know came back long enough to kind of take over. Like if she could, I don't know, control Wolverine's claws and like could have somehow, like if they were hugging or something, could have somehow made his claws come out on her own and like killed herself with his claws instead of him killing her. I would have done something like that. Just to show that she still had some sort of control. Like she, I don't know. Again, I'm older now. Like, I just hate the idea that she, her last words to him were save me. Like, we don't need men to save us. Like, for real. That is just so blah.
So. Another thing I would have changed is that actually, like, Storm showed some level of intelligence in regards to her powers. She can fly in a plane, land in a fog, and then about 5 minutes of walking around goes, oh, actually, I'll clear this up. Man, you've got the powers of the weather. Why didn't you clear it up when you were flying above? Why did you have to wait for Wolverine to go, I can't see anything down there?
And if she had all those powers, like, there would never be a moment of peace. Like, on that battlefield, there would have been hail and lightning and tornadoes. Like, I would never have turned my power off, you know?
Frustration. Why was she not written better and stronger and more decisive? And why did it have to be explained to the audience? We know she has weather powers.
Yes. Her name is Storm. Come on.
Anyway, right. As you said earlier, we've been doing this the last few episodes. So in 2006, the other superhero movies that came out were Superman Returns by Bryan Singer. So strangely enough, they put them up against each other. There was an animated movie came out as well, Ultimate Avengers. I think that was a direct-to-DVD release. Marvel was jumping on the bandwagon of direct-to-DVD releases at that point, and they were, it feels to me, probably piloting potential MCU-type stuff because obviously a lot of that was... Yeah, the MCU was based off of some of the Ultimate stuff as well as the normal 616. And then 300 also came out that year. So
300, I loved. A lot of people have issues with 300. I loved 300.
I love 300. I haven't seen it for a long time, but I remember enjoying it. So
that was the first time I had ever heard of Michael Fassbender. And I was like, this guy, I like this guy.
I think other people did too.
So. Yeah.
Also, movies of note in 2006. So just to set the scene of the year that this came out. So Pan's Labyrinth came out. The Prestige, Children of Men, The Departed. For British people, we had two quite standout movies, Kid Outhood and Borat, which I know is Jasmine's favorite movie ever.
Absolutely not. Although I will say, The Prestige was... phenomenal. That was a fantastic movie. It was so good and it was so underrated.
Yeah, no, it was a really good film. I love Children of Men. I remember going to the cinema to see that. I think it was brilliant. Did you ever see that?
Yeah. 2006, I worked at a movie theater. So from 2006 to 2008, I literally watched every single thing that came out in theaters, everything.
I didn't watch Kid Outhood at the time. I watched it years later, but I love those films.
Never. I don't know what that is.
What's his name? Noel Clark? Is it Noel Clark? They're just films of kind of street life London.
Okay.
But clearly exaggerated and dramatized. And
of course.
Right, okay, ratings time. What would you rate this then, and what would you rate this now? Because I know we haven't done it with every one of them, but I think because our opinions have changed.
Okay, so before, in 2006, this would have gotten a zero. And I think now I probably give it a 2.
I honestly put my off screen. I put my hands up with a 2, just because I thought that's what you were going to say. So, I'm like you. I hated it when I watched this movie. I absolutely hated it. I remember even putting a comment online a couple of years later after Days of Future Past came out, saying Days of Future Past kind of redeemed this film. And somebody's like, nothing can redeem this film. I would have given this probably a 0.5 when this came out. I thought it was awful.
Yeah.
I was like, who gave this guy the green light to make this film?
Right.
What happened? I was annoyed about Superman Returns. I was like, Superman Returns was trash. And then we also end up with this trash.
Yeah.
It definitely would have been a 0.5, something like that. And I'm with you. I'm probably, I'd give this a 2 as well. I think it's massively improved on that.
Yeah.
From what I wanted it to be, I think, because my expectations were so much lower.
That is the problem. Like, this movie was so disappointing when you first saw it, when it first came out in 2006. And it was just like, there was nothing about it that could get you over that hump. Because X2 was so good. And I feel the same way about Spider-Man 3. Spider-Man 2 was so good. It was so good. And then Spider-Man 3 was garbage. It was so bad. And it was just like, what the hell are we doing here? Like, why are you even bothering to make a third movie if every third movie that you do is just useless?
There are elements of this.
Very I'm really nervous about Venom.
I mean, the first two are not great.
I know, they were terrible, but they were fun. But now I'm worried that the third one is just going to be terrible and no fun.
Do you know what would be actually weird is if number 3 was really good?
I would be shocked. Like, I feel the same way about Kraven. Like, I'm actually kind of anticipating Kraven, but now I'm really nervous because they pushed the release back. So I don't know anymore. I don't trust Fox. I don't trust them.
But Sony. That's
Sony. Sorry, I don't trust them.
It's really weird, isn't it? I don't know. I know the MCU started off strong, but it has wavered a little bit recently. But anyway, with there was lots in there I enjoyed. You said something earlier before we finish up that I wanted to shout out. When Charles Xavier was killed off and Magneto, his anguish, I was like, that's actually, whilst they were enemies, they were also really good friends.
Right.
And the one thing we didn't talk about was the end credit sequence.
Oh, yes.
Charles Xavier's return.
Yes.
The dead body.
Which they did hint at, like you always say.
Yeah, they did hint at this. Not dead body, sorry. A coma patient. And they talked about something about moving people's intelligence. And then right at the very end, you don't see the person's face, but he rolls over and he's like, Moira? She's like, Charles? I did think that was good. I thought
that was really cool.
So I didn't know if he was suddenly going to wake up and look like Charles, but
I doubt which it.
I assume he was going to, because...
Oh, no, I didn't assume that. I thought, like, yeah, this guy is going to be, like, it's going to be weird to get used to Xavier's voice coming from a different body. But, like, because they hinted at it so hard at the beginning of the film, I was like, oh, I know what's happening. Because at first I was like, Phoenix is going to die, and then her consciousness is somehow going to transfer to that body. That was my first thought. And then when the scene happened, I was like, oh, it was Charles.
Yeah. It they did enough to make you think it's not going to move beyond this film, killing off Jean Grey, killing off Scott Summers, killing off Charles Xavier. Then when Charles returned at the end, I thought, okay, there will be a fourth one.
Yeah.
And there was not.
Honestly, I'm glad that there was not.
Right, okay. So in our next episode, we will be taking a break from these movies and returning to our Late to the Party book club, which will be episode 18. And going with these X-Men theme that we have, we'll be looking at the Dark Phoenix saga by Chris Claremont.
Yes.
You can also follow us on social media. We're everywhere. Geeks Unleashed is on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
Yes. And you can get this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Google, Podbean, Apple, Spotify. We are everywhere. So please leave us a 5-star review and tell your geeky friends.
I hope you look forward to continue our X-Men journey with us.
Well, now I'm super intrigued to read the Dark Phoenix saga, because it has to be better than this, right? Like, that's that's what I'm going on.
So. Do you know what? I'm glad this. I've said this before. This podcast has made me do things, read and watch things mm-hmm. that I've never experienced or probably either wanted to or just had the time. But I thought the Dark Phoenix saga would be a nice follow on from actually the first time we saw a version on the big screen.
Right. Just like we enjoyed that Daredevil book a lot more than the first film with Ben Affleck. Yeah. So I have high hopes for this book. So we'll see. Join us next week.
Bye-bye.
Good journey.